Tell me about what you learned in that time. I mean, this sounds a little bit trite. I've watched The West Wing end to end 4 times. My wife and I, somehow we go back to this every couple of years. For some reason, can't explain it. What is it like in The West Wing, where the frenetic pace of all of the decisions, all of the information that's coming through, how does it work in order for things to get done? Because from the outside, it looks like a very, very busy place.
The West Wing is actually quite realistic. There were a lot of people from the Clinton White House who were sort of staff writers or consultants to the West Wing, and the sort of walking and talking and everything moving and everything changing. And I mean, I was Donna Moss. I was not very important. I was the secretary to the person who was important. I was the young advanced staffer. I mean, I definitely wasn't, you know, CJ Craig or Toby or anybody else. I certainly wasn't the chief of staff. But yeah, I was the young hopeful, came off the campaign trail and just like was the administrative jack of all trades. I did a little speech writing. I did a little advance work. I did a little bit of policy research. I found the 4 young people who sat next to the First Lady during the State of the Union when Bill Clinton talked about the idea of national service and AmeriCorps and what we'd accomplished. And I had to find them and interview them and make sure they were all telegenic and photogenic and they had great stories. And there was a diversity of stories and backgrounds. And I joke around that was actually the beginning of my career in executive search, was sort of finding people who would be the right people at the right time. But very much the frenetic pace and the having to work together and the idea that you get from the West Wing that there is never a smartest person in the room. Everybody actually can add something in. And when people stop adding in what they have to offer, the end result is worse. But at the end of the day, someone does have to make a decision. Right. And when that person makes the decision, you go out publicly all in lockstep.
If you look back on that time, given, and we're going to get into the rest of this part of your career now into search and the other work that you do now, if you think about the 3 or so lessons that sort of still sit in the back of your mind every time you walk out the door in the morning, what are the things that you took away from that really incredible time?
Yeah. Number one, if it's to change, why shouldn't you be the one to change it? Right? Everybody has capacity. Everyone has agency. Everyone has a voice. And if you don't like the way something's done, get up and fight, right? Start doing something about it, because everyday people change the world. And I saw that over and over and over again in Washington, D.C. Number two, there is nothing and no one that you can't learn from. Right. So every single person, regardless of where they came from. And again, I believe this today. We are 2 days after Donald Trump stormed the United States and people are shocked and appalled and they can't believe it, or they're jubilant and excited and they're foaming at the mouth for what's to come. And I still believe that there are people on the other side of the aisle from whom I can learn a great deal, in the same way that I think they can learn from me. And number three, that leadership, we get leadership wrong because we think leaders lead from the front. And I worked for a man in the White House by the name of Eli Siegel. I actually dedicated my book Limitless to him. He ran the 1992 campaign and he was a very successful businessman. He could have had any job he wanted in the administration. He could have been the ambassador to France, right? He could have had the cushiest, best job ever. And he wanted to run national service because he believed in youth. And he spent so much time barnstorming the country, meeting with governors, meeting with senators, meeting with local agency directors to learn from them and to figure out what they cared about and to bring them on board. And when Eli died, he died very prematurely of mesothelioma when he was in his 50s. There were 1,000 people at his funeral, and Senator Ted Kennedy got up at his funeral and gave the eulogy and said, "There are 1,000 people in this room, and every single one of you think that you're his best friend or his good friend, and every single one of you is right." Eli had a full page obituary in the New York Times, and yet people had no idea who he was, because he led from the middle always. And he made sure that he didn't have to get the credit in order to get the job done. And I learned so much about how you create partnerships and how you create movements by watching him revel in the excitement and the glory of getting the job done, knowing that the right people who needed to know knew that he was the guy who made it happen, but that he didn't do it just for ego.
It's funny how that is such a foreign concept to so many people. You know, when you see sporting fields, when you see, sorry, sporting teams, when you see people who operate in the military and you see the team jubilance of achieving an outcome. And even that extends to people on the sideline that didn't actually play an active role on the day, in the minute of that thing happening. And you hear reporters say, look, you know, how did you feel sitting on the sidelines? I don't think you're asking the right question. Like, I'm ecstatic that we've achieved this together. Like, it's really something else that people don't seem to understand.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, when you see people get a Super Bowl ring, like, they give a Super Bowl ring to not just the starting players, they give a Super Bowl ring to all of the players, because those players are the reason that the starting players are better, because they played against them in practice, right? Like, they give it to the athletic trainers, they give it to the people who keep the field up, right? Like, we are all the sum greater than the sum of our parts. And when we start to think that I alone can fix it, right, that I'm the person, I think that we lose a lot. We lose a lot of what makes us special. And I think it's why it's so important to always ask yourself, like, am I this important? Like, am I the only person who matters here? And if you are the only person who matters, then you're either not assembling a great team, or you're kind of micromanaging, or no one else cares about it as much as you. But I don't like to be the smartest person in any room. I don't like to be the most important person in any room. I like to be in rooms where I can actually learn and we can lead in, I don't think everything has to be consensus, right? Like, at some point you have to make a decision, you have to move forward. Again, the West Wing, like, Jed Bartlett made a decision, move forward. When he said next, what's next? You knew the conversation was over and it was time for the next thing. My assistant once sent me a compilation of Jed Bartlett going, what's next? What's next? Yeah. Every time I'm like, we're done with that topic. What's next? Like, she's like, I get it now, right? Like, you have to make a decision. You have to move forward. And sometimes that decision is unpopular, but leaders who make unpopular decisions that everyone is able to still walk in lockstep do it because they have led from the center, not just from the front.